All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you to a brand new episode of SCAR. And SCAR stands for Seeking Courage and Redemption with Dustin Rivenbark. I've got a great guest lined up for you guys today. Before we get into all of that, though, I want to give you the intent of the podcast, sort of the why are we here, so to speak. And we're here to work out our hardships, our trials, our tribulations in such a way that we can begin to unfold God's plan and purpose for our lives. Now, you may be thinking, well, that's great, Dustin, but why do I need to listen to SCAR? Why me? Why do I need to listen to it? And the truth is, we all have stuff. We all have hardships. We all have things that occur in our lives that can stack up and can accumulate in such a way that they begin to even change the trajectory of our lives if we let them. So that's exactly why you need to listen to SCAR, is because we all have stuff, hardships, obstacles. And here at SCAR, it's a safe place that we can all come together and share how we faced obstacles and hardships and how we overcame them. So boom, there it is. Glad that you are tuning in and listening to SCAR. With all of that being said, I want to introduce Mr. Joshua Shea to everyone.
Hello, Dustin. Thank you for inviting me on your show today.
Hey, man, I'm so glad you're here, Joshua. Now, for those of you who don't know, Joshua resides in Maine. Tell us a little bit about the weather today in Maine.
Well, the weather today, you know, we're recording in early November,
yes,
which means that it can be anywhere from a foot of snow on the ground to 80 degrees, and today we lucked out. We're at about 60 degrees. It's very nice. Last week it was about 10 degrees with the wind chill, and I still haven't taken care of my lawn and patio furniture, so I'm glad we don't have snow yet, because my wife always gives me a dirty look when it's out there,
yeah.
And we have a couple inches of snow, so I'm hoping this weekend it still is 60 degrees, because that'll be a lot more pleasant than putting it away if it's 10 degrees.
Well, hey, going from a foot of snow to 80 degrees, it sounds much like South Alabama here. We are, minus the foot of snow, but our temperature varies all over the place. It's liable to be 50 one morning, it's liable to be 70 the next, so... I'm here with you, and so we're looking forward to this podcast. Now, Joshua is a pornography, I want to say, sort of expert. He kind of helps people overcome their battle and struggle with pornography through his own battle that he has faced with pornography and all of those things. Joshua, would you mind kind of taking me through your story a little bit and how you got here?
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. My story of pornography addiction is really not that different as far as the structure of a lot of men. Dr. Patrick Carnes, who's kind of the godfather of sex and porn addiction research, he was doing it long before anybody else. He did one of the first major breakthrough studies and found that 70% of men who are porn or sex addicts were physically abused, 80% were sexually abused, and 95% were mentally or emotionally abused. When I was a kid, between the ages of about 2 and 7, I had a babysitter during the day who my parents left me with when they were at work. I experienced both sexual abuse and to a larger degree, mental and emotional abuse while I was being taken care of by her. One of the things that happened in that house was that there was, along with, you know, the sexual abuse, there was a lot of sexual inappropriateness.
Yeah.
That is a lot of the reason why at 11 or 12 years old, when an older cousin showed me hardcore pornography for the first time, you know, bells and whistles went off in my head.
Sure.
People say, how long did it take you to become a porn addict? And the answer is probably about 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And I don't say that jokingly. When I saw, I don't even know that I was responding to what was on the on the page. I don't remember, but it was like light shined from above. It was like I had just suddenly found the answer to my problems. I found an answer to anxiety and stress. And when people say, you know, pornography addiction's not a real addiction, I tell them that the only other time I ever had this kind of revelation feeling was about 3 years later when I got drunk at a wedding for the first time.
Wow.
When I was around 14 years old. And from 14 years old forward to about 6-7 years ago, I was a pornography addict and alcoholic. I use these two things in tandem. I can look over the timeline of my life, and whether it was high school, college, my dating years, when I was married, or when, you know, starting my career, or when things started to go well, those times in my life over that 25-year period, when things were hard, when things were worse, there were definite spikes of pornography use and alcohol use, and when things were going better, it was always there for me. A bad day meant that the end of it was drinking and pornography. You know, if I was by myself and lonely, it was usually pornography. If I was in a large group of people and I was anxious, it was alcohol. I used these two substances as my crutch for 25 years. I was fully addicted to both, and probably the pornography even more than the alcohol.
So, Josh, I want to back up a little bit. So I'm so glad that you made mention about the euphoria almost whenever you saw it for the first time. Last week, I interviewed a man, Jay Schiffman, who had struggled with drug addiction, with substance abuse. And this is much, I mean, what you described is so much in common with substance abuse. And so you translated it to the alcohol, and I'm so glad you did that, because we have to understand that addiction is addiction, whether it's pornography or whether it's alcohol or any other substance.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I know people tend to laugh when they hear about something like video game addiction.
Sure.
But it's absolutely real, because, like you said, addiction is addiction is addiction. Obviously, if I'm a heroin addict, I'm at a much greater risk of dying from my addiction. If I'm a gambling addict, I'm a much greater risk of going bankrupt. Obviously, there are side effects of your addictions, but if you look at the brain chemistry part of it, addiction is addiction is addiction. It's a process of first teaching your pleasure centers, and people always say dopamine, but it's actually six different chemicals, including serotonin, melatonin, and a couple others. It's about flooding your pleasure receptors with these chemicals, and what happens over time is that you start to burn out the nerve endings, essentially, and so you need more and more, and you need more and more. It's why the alcoholic goes from beer to wine to shots. It's why the gambling addict goes from $10 a hand of blackjack to 50 to 100. You know, it's why I went from looking at porn for 30 minutes to looking at it for an hour to looking at it for 3 hours, or from looking at very normal stuff to looking at stuff that people would think was more extreme. That's the natural course of addiction, and it happens in every addiction, because what's going on in the brain of an addict is the same, no matter what your addiction is.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. Even talking about something that's viewed as light and as funny as video game addiction, I'll tell you what, I met a wife one time that considered herself a widow. I mean, she would literally tell you, I consider myself a widow because my husband is at work half the time and comes home and is gaming 24/7, and that's a sad state. And so when you're looking at that, when you're looking at pornography addiction, when you're looking at pill addiction, you're beginning to unfold almost a picture that we can start to begin to understand, that the person that's dealing with this addiction has a real obstacle. They have a real problem on their hands. And so
absolutely. And the thing is, the real rough part of it is that you don't realize you have that problem until it's too late.
That's right. And now your early years, you made mention that you know 70% of men that deal with pornography addiction were abused, 95% emotionally abused, all of this stuff. Going through what you did with the babysitter and all of that, and then getting introduced to pornography in your early years, walk me kind of through your teenage years, and how did that addiction play out and even affect your early teenage years?
Yeah, well, I think that the addiction, and I've learned a lot of this through recovery and through doing the hard work. In looking back, I think that the addictions to both alcohol and pornography helped me repress those memories of what happened at the babysitter's house. And helped me put them in the past. I look at my high school years, and I found a video store, probably when I was about 14 years old. I found a video store not far from my house. This was before Blockbuster and the real big places. I think they might have been around because the mom and pops were starting to go out of business. And I went to a mom and pop video store where I rented movies. I've always been a big movie fan. I rented movies almost every day after school. And finally, one day, I just got up the courage to go to their little back room behind the swinging saloon doors, and I was only in there for a minute because I was, you know, scared. I picked out two movies real quick, adult movies. Don't know if I even looked at what they were, and I'm sure that I threw in another movie or two to try to hide the fact I had some porno movies there. But I was able to rent pornography at age 14.
Wow.
And it wasn't long after that I found a convenience store near my house that would sell beer to kids. And I would never had the guts to try to buy a six-pack, but I would go to the video store, I'd pick out a couple of porno movies, then I'd go to this convenience store. I would usually pick up two or three beers, bring them up to the counter, buy those, throw everything into my backpack, go home, and before my parents got home from work, I'd have one beer and watch one porno movie, and then after everybody went to bed, I would either drink that remaining beer or two and watch the other porn movie.
Wow.
That was my high school life, and while I recognized that the other kids weren't doing this, I just thought I was lucky and I cracked the code and I found the video store. And, you know, I was smarter than the other kids because I found the video store that would rent me porn. And everybody else wanted that. But it wasn't until I was probably 16 or 17 and I was on the soccer team in high school. We all, after a practice one day, we all went to a friend's house. And one of my friends had a porno movie on a VHS tape and popped it into the VCR. Okay, yeah, everybody started sitting around and making jokes and laughing about this porno movie that was playing. And I felt very different than them. This was when I recognized that I looked at pornography different than they did. They were having fun. It was a social thing. It was nothing that I wanted to participate in because pornography was very different to me. I experienced this years later also when I went with a bachelor party to my first strip club, and they were all having fun hooting and hollering and, you know, sticking dollar bills in ladies' underwear, and
yeah.
I didn't like that experience at all because my relationship with pornography, with sexuality, with alcohol, I've never liked going out to bars, has always been one-on-one by myself.
Wow.
And that's when I recognized that I wasn't like the other people around me.
That is so interesting, the different takes there and all of that. Now, let me ask you this. What is the state of porn addiction in the world today versus when you were growing up? What are you seeing? What trends? What fads? How are people responding to porn today?
Well, there are two answers to this, and it's kind of like before pandemic and after pandemic. In the last year, pornography has exploded on the internet so much worse than it was. And I've been doing this education for about 3 years. 3 years ago, it blew my mind away, some of the statistics. I don't even share those statistics very much anymore because I think they're all far, far too low. To give you an example of a scary statistic, in 2017, there's an organization called the Barna Group that does a lot of research. They interviewed thousands of men, and in the age group between 18 and 30 years old, they found that 33% of these men reported that they either had a pornography addiction, they watched too much pornography, or that they had a problem with pornography. Wow. Now, that was one out of three men under the age of 30 in 2017. Now, over this last year, we've had people stuck at home. We've had people, with very little outside reaction or outside interaction with the world compared to their usual lives, right, especially the younger people. And that led to a lot of when the pandemic first started, it led to a lot of the online pornography sites offering free subscriptions and to try to lure people in. And if you look at the statistics on the visits to websites from some of these massive pornography companies, from year to year, 2019 to 2020, their visits in 2020 were 70% more,
wow,
than they were in 2019. And that's not even the worst thing. The worst thing is that there is a website out there, and I won't share the name of it, but there's a website out there that recognized that there were, with the pandemic, with the quarantine, what we saw happen was that our service industries went out of business. So, or they shut down.
Yeah.
Waiters, waitresses, bartenders. These are all younger people for the most part. Maybe they didn't qualify for unemployment insurance. Maybe that wasn't enough. But because this younger group of people under 30, and keep in mind, these are the people who grew up on the internet, so they have a lower stigma towards pornography,
sure,
than older people. This one website, which is kind of a cross between Facebook and Etsy, started to get them to make pornography. And right now, if you ask anybody under 35 years old, and again, I won't throw the name out there because I don't want to promote it, but you ask anybody under 35 years old about this website, and they know exactly what you're talking about. You ask anybody over 35, they've never heard of it. It's because it is a part of this younger culture where young women and young men are online making their own do-it-yourself pornography. And between July of 2019 and what will be the end of 2020, they went from 70,000 people worldwide making pornography and posting it to somewhere between 1.3 and 1.5 million people worldwide.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness.
And here's the thing that I wonder, and I haven't heard anybody else asking this question. Are we going to find that making pornography is just the other side of the coin of watching pornography?
Mm.
And I ask this because the last book I wrote, I found all of this stuff so interesting during the pandemic that I actually wrote a short book called Porn and the Pandemic, which you can get on Amazon or through my website. And I interviewed a lot of these younger adults who moved over to these websites. And they were like, I'm never going back to McDonald's. I'm never going back to the Gap. I don't want to make minimum wage. I'm making $3,000 a month getting naked online for people. So why would I ever go back to McDonald's for minimum wage? And I asked them, so it's just about the money. And almost uniformly, whether it was a male or whether it was a female, they said the money wasn't the most important thing. The thing that was most important was that they felt special. They were told that they were good looking, they were funny, they were smart, that they, the person on the other end wished that they could date them and wished that they knew them in real life. And it gave essentially a dopamine rush to the people who were creating the pornography. If I create porn, then I get this good feeling from these other people. And what I wonder is, 20 years from now, are we going to have women who are 40, 45 years old who are still making pornography for the rush of being told that they're beautiful or they're special because they didn't get that when they were a kid? And like I said, is this just the other side of the same coin of pornography addiction, not just being for the viewers, but potentially also being for the people who make it?
Josh, you're on to something here, and I truly believe it's almost like a new addiction emerging. It's like a...
Absolutely. And, we didn't... 20, 25 years ago, when the internet was introduced, I think I was like 19 years old when I got on the internet. I was the first person I knew with a email address, because I was a big geek into tech. And everybody else was, it was about 2-3 years later when everybody else started to get on the internet. And we, all of a sudden, the access to pornography was amazing. I don't think I ever rented a video or bought a magazine after about 1998, because the internet was there and everything was free. And I, at the time, one of my good friends reminded me not too long ago that I said to him, what's it going to be like for kids growing up who have just nonstop access to any kind of pornography that they want? Because I had to luck out and find a store. Most guys my age talk about finding a magazine in dad's drawer or finding a magazine in the woods.
Right.
And most people today don't even realize during the pandemic, Playboy magazine went out of business. Most people don't even know that. It wasn't a big news story, yet Playboy magazine, before the internet started, was one of the most popular magazines in the world.
Right.
And the internet has changed everything. And it's lowered the age that the average kid sees hardcore pornography. There's so much that they can view. And aside from addiction, just the amount of sexual material that children are now seeing and the way that they are being sexualized at a younger age, even if they don't end up as addicts, is just not healthy.
So let me ask you this, speaking of the health and all of that, to the person who says, okay, Josh, I hear you, but I'm attracted to men. Okay, Josh, I hear you, but I'm attracted to women. It's the way I was made. It's genetic. It's the way God made me. All of these. What's wrong with looking at a little porn here and there? What's wrong with all of that? Tell me, what's wrong with looking at pornography from not just your perspective, but in general?
Okay. It's funny because I used to share about 10 statistics at this point, but the last presentation that I gave before COVID hit back in December of 2019 was at a college up here in New England. I was invited to speak to a woman's sexuality group at a health center at a college, probably about 15 to 20 women. And I gave my typical presentation, my facts and figures and, little anecdotes. And then we got to the Q&A part. And one girl who didn't say much during the presentation, she was probably 19 years old, maybe 20. She raised her hand and she said, I don't know if anybody else feels this way, but I don't like having sex with virgin men. And I said, well, that's fine, but what does that have to do with pornography? And I noticed a lot of the young women around the room were nodding. And I said, okay, this is interesting. Tell me about this. And they said, well, you just talked about how the average boy now sees pornography at 11 or 12 years old. Pornography is the sex ed for our young men now.
Mm.
And even if you're watching the most vanilla, one man, one woman, quote unquote, typical pornography, the man is pictured as the aggressor. The man will have his hands around her neck. The man will be saying horrible, horrible things.
You know,
and the man will be bending her into shapes nobody gets bent into. And this doesn't even talk about how gross these things end. These boys who are 12, 13 years old, this is the view of sex that they're getting. So when they're 18 or 19 and they're finally having sex for the first time, they've seen these scenes of sexuality hundreds, if not thousands, of times. And they take their cues from the way that the men behave in the porno movies. But these girls who have had relations before, or anybody else, you or me or anybody who's been in a healthy sexual relationship, can tell you that pornography is fiction.
Yeah.
It's not a documentary. It's not a reality show. Pornography is fiction. But how are these boys supposed to know that? So when they get there with their first real sexual experience, they act like a porn star. And real women, even real young women, do not want to deal with that. So they don't want to retrain them. They don't want to have to tell them the right way to do it. Say that, you know, a lot of young women these days avoid having sex with virgin men.
Yeah.
And I've asked other women who are in this college age group if they feel this way too. And I consistently hear yes, yes, yes. So none of these people are addicts. None of these people necessarily have quote-unquote problems with pornography, but pornography is giving an unhealthy view of sexuality to young men at a time that they are forming their views of sexuality. That's the danger of pornography.
You know, these are bringing home some hard-hitting truths. This is very, very, very deep now. When you look at let's say you have a man or a woman that's involved in a relationship and they're past all of that stage and they are in a healthy relationship, but suddenly one finds out that their partner has this pornography addiction or has been watching porn, how do you encourage someone to deal with that?
Well, the first thing I'd say is you have to admit to yourself that you're not in a healthy sexual partnership.
That's good.
Or you're not in a healthy relationship if somebody's been lying to you for years. I mean, the reality is my wife knew that I looked at pornography, and my wife is not a, you know, Puritan, frigid type of woman. She had the idea that, you know, guys view pornography from time to time, and it's not that big a deal. She had no idea the extent that my pornography addiction went, and I hid it for nearly 10 years from her. And I think that's the way that a lot of women feel, but I lied to her for 10 years. That's not a healthy relationship either.
Sure.
So the first thing that people have to admit to themselves, yes, you can still love this person. Yes, you can, you know, absolutely think the world of them, but you have to admit that they have a problem. They are not healthy, and that problem has bled over into the relationship, and you perhaps have been making excuses, or you perhaps have chose to look the other way, because a lot of times when women will look back, they'll say, oh, I see a lot of red flags now that I'm looking for it. And a lot of women beat themselves up over it. And I have to tell them, listen, if you're not looking for it, you're not going to see it, because odds are your partner or your husband was a porn addict before you ever met him. My wife, I was a porn addict for 12, 13 years before I met my wife. I knew how to be an addict. I knew how to hide it. She had nothing to do with my porn addiction. I hid it very well from her because addicts are a master of deceit. They are a master of manipulation, and she never found out about it. So I always tell people you have to accept that it's not everything's perfect. There is a lot of stuff going on there. If he genuinely is a porn addict, he has an illness. He has the illness of addiction. Now, if he just likes watching porn and you have communicated you don't like pornography, that doesn't necessarily make him an addict. What it means is that you have some communication issues, and it means that, you know, you have to decide how pornography is going to either have a role in your relationship or not have a role in your relationship. And if he continues to look, what are you going to do about that? You know, I always have to bring up the point that 50% of marriages break up, and it has nothing to do with pornography a lot of the time. It has to do with communication issues. So if you truly have an addict, you can go about taking care of it one way. If you have a guy who just looks at pornography and you have bad communication with him, that's a separate thing. And that's the first thing you have to figure out, is what is a true porn problem and what is just a true relationship problem.
So in that, okay, let me ask you this. You know, we on this show, it is a faith-based show. So for someone that says, okay, pornography in any sense is a problem, it may not be a full-out addiction, but it is a problem. We don't want our spouses looking at that, okay? So if we find out that is the case, I guess what are some red flags to someone that maybe they're not full out porn addicts or pornography? What are some red flags that you may have an issue here, regardless of how addicted you are? I guess describe porn, maybe define it. Like, do you get what I'm saying? Like, what are some red flags to someone?
I absolutely do. First of all, when it comes to what is pornography, I think we all agree that there is a certain material out there that is pornography. It's the XXX stuff. It's the stuff that's behind the cellophane at the bookstore, or, you know, we all know what the XXX stuff is. But I also, you know, tell people, pornography is what people want to make of it. Pornography is anything written or visual that can be used for arousal.
All right. Say that again. That was huge.
Pornography is any written or visual material that is used for arousal.
Great definition.
The example I give is that I was never somebody who was attracted to women in lingerie. That just was nothing that I was interested in. When I was going through my addiction, you know, my wife was in her 30s, late 30s. I had a teenage daughter. We got Victoria's Secret magazines almost every day in the mail. These people just bombed us with junk mail. And so we would have these catalogs laying around on our end tables and our coffee table. And to me, they were junk mail. They were just just messy. Now, when I was in inpatient rehab taking care of my problem, I met a man who didn't like hardcore pornography, didn't like naked people. He liked lingerie. He loved Victoria's Secret catalogs. That was his pornography. And that's the thing, is that pornography differs from person to person, and that needs to be understood. Just because, you know, you may subscribe to, you know, women's magazines like Cosmo or whatnot because you like to read them as a woman, but that doesn't mean that your husband isn't using them for pornographic purposes.
This is she the point. Yes, this is the point.
He may prefer to read erotic literature. That may be the thing that he enjoys, and it has nothing to do with photographs or video clips. You know, pornography can be written. You know, it's any written or visual material that is used to arouse. And that is, you know, that's different from person to person to person. We all, and I think it's one of the reasons why we don't talk about pornography as a society, is because it talks about those little secret things that lay in the back of our head that, you know, scratch a certain itch that we don't want to tell people about because we're embarrassed or ashamed.
That's exactly right, Josh. And I wanted to bring that point out to surface. I think you said it best. This could be multiple different avenues, multiple different things that spark arousal, and it boils down to a heart issue. So in a healthy healthy relationship, open communication is important. And so if anything that you are using in an opposite way that you know your spouse would have an issue with is leaning towards an unhealthy relationship, correct?
Absolutely. But I think it's also important to recognize, and one of my therapists said this once, and I thought it was brilliant. They said that your brain will think anything for 3 seconds. So it's okay if you're driving down the street and you see a pretty girl, and your brain quickly says, oh, there's a pretty girl. That doesn't mean you have a problem. But as this therapist told me, he said, your brain will think anything at once for 3 seconds. Beyond that, you're making a choice to think of it.
Bingo.
And it's a lot like, you know, if somebody cuts you off in traffic, you think to yourself, I want to kill that guy. Well, 3 seconds later, you don't want to kill that guy.
Right, right.
You're just a little annoyed. It's the same thing. If I see a, you know, good-looking woman walking down the street, I look over, my brain knows what a good-looking woman is, so it recognizes that. If I leer, if I slow down, if I linger, that's me making the choice to do that, and that's where things can get unhealthy.
See, and it's these types of conversations that people are scared to have, that people are nervous to have. Listen, we were created as visual, emotional beings, and so the opposite sex is attractive. It's just the way that we were designed, and so it's okay to be attracted, but that heart, when you start taking it further than it should be, past that 3 second, it's almost like the what is it, the 5 second rule when you drop food on the floor, you know?
Exactly.
It's like once you take it past that initial, oh wow, she's cute, you know, or something like that, we have a problem.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is that people need to recognize is that there are two kinds of sexuality: healthy sexuality and not healthy sexuality. You're not a third group off to the side of no sexuality. We all come to this earth because of sexual intercourse. We all go through puberty, which releases certain sexual chemicals into our body that we create until we're, you know, much older. Sexuality is a normal part of life. It's not a dirty thing. It's not a bad thing. But it can lead to maladaptive and negative behaviors.
Yes.
If you don't pay attention to it.
So now we realize that there might be an issue, or we have a full-blown addiction or a problem that we need to get into check. What does the recovery process look like, Josh?
Well, it's a little bit different for everybody, and I always tell people, if you think you have any problem, it's important to sit down with somebody, whether it be a recovering addict or whether it be your regular doctor or you go see a therapist, to talk about a strategy for taking care of it, because that's what you really need, is a strategy. And people work in different ways. I found that the 12-step groups, they helped me for a little while. I was in AA for about 7 months, and I got out of it what I could, and then it really wasn't helping me anymore. There are some people who that's the answer, and they stay there for 20, 30, 40 years. There are other people who really love the therapy route. I find that one of my great ways of recovery is coming on shows like yours, or is writing my books, which I have 3 of, or writing articles online about it, because I've been a journalist since I was 18, 19 years old, and communicating about problems and communicating about my life is one of the ways that I stay healthy. So, you know, everybody has a different specific journey to take in recovery, but I've yet to meet the person who, if they want it bad enough, they can't recover.
Wow, that is enormous. And that's across the board. Even with, I learned from substance abuse, there is There is no addiction that you can't detox from, so to speak. There's nothing that you can't come back from. And so what would you, how would you encourage someone that's facing a struggle, a sex addiction, addiction, a porn addiction, or whatever that may be?
Well, I can tell you that the people that I work with, and through my website, I do have an advising and coaching side of things. I don't pretend to be a therapist, but what I am is a good ear. I don't judge. I can make a safe space. You know, whatever pornography you've ever seen, I've probably seen worse. And what I have found, when I went to rehab for sex and porn addiction back in 2014, I met other addicts and talked to them for the first time and felt not judged for the first time. And I could talk openly and I wasn't hiding it. So I always tell people now, and I'm working with people one-on-one who contact me, I find that the best thing is to have a conversation with somebody who has been there. Have a conversation with somebody who is in recovery and just bare your soul. And it can be something where you're like, oh, I like to do this with pornography. And it can be, and you know, I can absolutely probably relate to you just starting that line of communication. And I usually work with people 5 or 6 video phone calls, or, you know, a dozen emails back and forth, just talking about things, because a lot of people are afraid to go get therapy or to go sit in a support group, you know, for the first time ever. And I'm a nice way to tiptoe into it. And you don't need to talk to me. I'm not trying to sell anything here. You don't need to talk to me. I just urge people, find somebody who is recovering in your addiction and have a conversation with them, because it's going to open your mind to recovery, and you're going to find somebody who understands you, who understands what the addiction is like, who understands the pulls. For instance, you know, it's one of these things that every porn addict that I've ever talked to talks about how they would sit down at a computer or in front of a VCR and say, I'm only going to look at porn for 30 minutes. And then 6 hours later, they're still trying to find that perfect porn clip to end their porn watching on. Wow. And they can't find it. They can't find that thing that hits their dopamine. Every porn addict I've met has had this situation happen where they can't find the perfect piece of porn, and they spend 10 times longer looking at it than they planned. Now, that's something that if you're a porn addict, you don't know until you talk to somebody else. Wow. Who has had this issue. So find somebody, you know, long answer short, find somebody who is in recovery but who had the same problem as you did, whether it's porn or gambling or alcohol or whatever, and just have an open conversation with them. They won't judge you. They won't make you feel embarrassed or ashamed. And you can tell your truth to them. And there's something about sharing your truth that really jumpstarts the recovery process.
So let me ask you this, okay? Say I'm fine, everything's fine, we're all good. But we noticed those facts that you said earlier about the rapid growth in pornography, especially the new age, the internet, the pandemic, all of that. What about if I'm just listening to this? What if I'm nervous for my kids, man? I have young kids addicted to the internet, love social media. How can I keep my kids away from pornography?
Well, how do you keep your kids away from cigarettes or alcohol or drugs? Or how do you know that they're crossing the street the right way, or, you know, they're doing their homework? You teach them responsibility, and you teach them right from wrong, and you hope that it takes.
Yes.
You know, I don't believe that teaching your child about pornography has to wait until they're 14 years old. You know, you can start at 7 or 8 years old and simply say something like, if you ever see a picture of a naked person or 2 or 3 naked people that somebody shows you on their phone or some on their computer, just tell mommy and daddy. And also, while you're at it, don't ever let anybody take any pictures of you without your clothes on, and you don't take any pictures of people without their clothes on, and you can leave it at that. And then when they're 10 or 11, maybe it gets a little bit more specific. And when they're 13 and 14, starting puberty, you can make it more specific. But I believe that the pornography speech belongs with the addictions and the evils of the world speech. I don't believe it's part of the birds and the bees speech.
Yes, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And so, to the person who thinks this conversation is too graphic, or this conversation is unrealistic, or any of that in talking about pornography, let me just tell you, it's just like you said before, sex is real. It's a part of life. It's how we're wired. It's just one of those things where we have to address these situations. So this is a real struggle for a lot of men. This is a real struggle for a lot of women. And it just goes from there, and a lot of children even. And so I'm so glad that you came on here and brought a whole nother insight and brought a whole nother perspective to this that we've never had on Scar before. And so I'm really hoping that this can resonate with some people, Josh. I'm really hoping that your story, your passion, where can people go to find out more about you and find more resources on this topic?
Yeah, well, you can visit my website. It is recoveringpornaddict.com. That's recoveringpornaddict.com. I do have a list of resources up there if you want to look into 12-step groups, if you want to look into rehabs, or want more materials to read. I write a couple articles there every week, either about addiction or about recovery. My books are available up there. I also have the interviews that I've done with people through podcasts or radio. And, you know, I try to treat it as an information center. And then you can contact me as well. You know, I don't hide from this. I don't try not to talk to people. I want to help as many people as I can. If you think you have a problem, you probably do, and you need to take care of it. Like I said, just sit down with somebody who knows what they're talking about, and they can help guide you. That's really what this is. I think that we're put on earth to help each other, despite, you know, the status of the world at the moment. I think we have far more in common with each other, no matter what we do at the ballot box, or what, you know, music we like, or who we vote for, or who, you know, what we eat. We are very similar when you get to the core. People want to help each other, and all you have to do is reach out. One of the things I never did when I thought I was a big shot was reach out for help. And there is nothing stronger, there is nothing manlier, there is nothing better you can do than to look at someone and say, please give me a hand. And also be there for when somebody says it to you.
My friend, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Joshua Shea, once again, we thank you so much. For our listeners, I just want you guys to be encouraged. Know that you have outlets. You can reach out to us here at SCAR. You can reach out to Josh through his website, through his social media. Please, whatever you do, reach out, talk to someone. As for our listeners, we will see you in the next couple of days.